This episode is brought to you in part by Thomas Nelson, publisher of I Could Be Wrong, But I Doubt It, Why Jesus is Your Greatest Hope on Earth and in Eternity, by Phil Robertson. Available now, everywhere you get audiobooks.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Worth Your Time podcast. I'm your host, Erica, and I'm coming to you today with an exciting guest. Her name is Dana Brown Ritter. Thank you so much for joining me today, Dana.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so Dana is the Washington Bureau Chief for CBN News, that's Christian Broadcasting Network, which is pretty cool. And you and I think we met through Hope Writers, right?
I think so. Yeah.
So it's kind of funny that we weren't already acquainted through DC ties. But yeah, I think I sort of recognized you were in Hope Writers. And I thought, hey, she's like in the media world in DC, which is sort of where I came from a little bit. So that was a cool connection to make. And then just to see that we were both Christians and in this group together. So, you know, for a long time, I kept thinking I should have her on the podcast. So I'm so glad that we're finally doing it.
Well, thank you. I am a listener of your podcast and a subscriber. So it's really fun to be able to have the chance to be on this end of it. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, there's several things I want to talk to you about. They're all sort of different, but I'm going to start with your career because I think it's really interesting. So tell us a little bit about, well, first tell us, you know, where do you live? Tell us a little about, I guess, your family quickly. And then sort of how did you get to become the Washington Bureau chief of a TV network?
Okay, sure. Well, I live in Northern Virginia in Fairfax with my husband, Michael, and our 2.5-year-old son, Caden, and our 15-year-old Puggle, Brokaw.
Oh, man. Brokaw. Oh, my gosh. That's awesome.
Yeah. So we'll get into the level of my news nerdiness, but yes, that is from my dog's name. And yes, I have had a chance to tell the actual Tom Brokaw about Brokaw the dog.
Oh, so that's so cool. I love that.
And I work in Washington, D.C., downtown, as the Washington Bureau Chief for CBN News, which, as you mentioned, is the Christian Broadcasting Network. I've been in this position at CBN for about 4 years, a little over 4 years. I came in the week before Trump was inaugurated.
Okay. So,
totally chaotic time.
And where did you come from?
Directly, this time I came from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. I was working at the CBS affiliate there as the news director. I have a local television news background. So I worked in Roanoke, Virginia, Norfolk, Virginia, Pittsburgh, Washington, D.C. And then I actually previously worked at CBN News as a White House producer about 8 years ago, and left and went back into local news and went into management and then returned as bureau chief 4 years ago.
Wow. So
a lot of moving, but hopefully this is it. I think my husband's kind of over the shiny career objects.
Well, if you're in DC or New York, you're sort of where all the shiny stuff is already. So hopefully you don't have to move.
Yeah, we're in the middle of where everything is happening. So, yeah.
So how would you, I mean, I don't know, kind of sum up the past 4 years, well, 5 years, I guess, because that is a crazy time to move into the DC media network, like the Trump years. So how would you characterize that time?
It was a roller coaster ride, Erica. Honestly, I'm still kind of not, you know, when you ride an actual roller coaster and then you get off and you're kind of still feel like you're moving a little. I have that sense. I still have that sense, you know, with having worked in Washington before, I was used to what I would call like a normal news rhythm, and nothing about Trump was normal in the news rhythm. It was, everything was big, breaking, sometimes scandalous news happening at all hours. And before that, Washington was very much a town that was kind of buttoned up by 4:30. You know, the occasional Bin Laden would be killed at 1 a.m., right?
Like, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. And so it was four really intense news coverage years. And now that he's out of office and we have a new president, some of those normal Washington routines are back, but I'm still not used to it.
You have PTSD.
PTSD, I think so.
So were you, I assume, because even I was, well, I wouldn't say I was like this because I didn't have to be in the news all the time, but did you wake up and see like what's he tweeted?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I still, I mean, even he's not on Twitter anymore, but I had him on alert. And okay. So, except for sometimes when just for mental health reasons, I needed to turn those alerts off a few times over the years. I had him on alert, and not only him, you know, multiple cabinet members and things like that. So that is just goes with the territory of the job, is really being on top of it. You know, he certainly did make a lot of news, which if you're a news person, you have to appreciate that. And then, you know, being able, when he was on Twitter, whether, you know, you could characterize that as good or bad is fine. You still did have direct word from the president himself. And so that is, you know, that was unique to that time period, but it was definitely very busy, long hours. I mean, cabinet members getting fired, you know, just everything was just huge, you know, dropping a Moab.
This is not a take at all on him being kicked off social media, because I don't know that I have a, like, I don't know that I'm like, yeah, that's great. But in a way, like, it has been kind of nice, because I feel like if he was still on Twitter, like, we'd still be getting these stories about the tweets, and because you can't resist it. And he would be, again, making himself the story. And so, again, like I said, I'm not really into, like, censorship or kicking people off. But at the same time, it's been kind of a relief.
Yeah, it's a reminder that there are other voices in the room, you know?
Now, yeah. I have a question about, so you guys are Christian broadcasting. So how would you say you cover the news differently as a Christian network?
Yeah, so our goal is to present and approach the news from a Christian perspective, and so from a biblical worldview is our goal each day as we approach the news. And so sometimes you can see that in the choices of stories that we cover. I have told, we did an interview a few years ago with the New York Times about our chief political analyst, and I remember the day that the reporter was there was like the week of the National Prayer Breakfast, and I explained to her, this is like the Super Bowl for us.
Yes.
National Prayer Breakfast is a huge thing for our audience and for our newsroom, and that is not really the case anywhere else, you know. However, there are other stories that we would cover just as intently and, you know, follow the TikTok of everything, just like we are right now with the COVID package that's working its way through Congress. We're covering that, just like the mainstream media would cover it. But sometimes we will have a different take on a story. We do try to be intentional at looking for hope and looking for light and where the Lord is potentially at work in a situation, or if we, you know, can see something that will bring people hope, especially in the last year over COVID, looking for highlighting those types of stories. We like to do that as well.
Yeah. I just had a question on my head and it just went away. Okay. Well, let me recalibrate here. I'm so sorry. I guess, you know, what do you like about working in the news business? It's very fast paced, like you said. So what is it that draws you to that kind of work?
Yeah. The first thing that drew to me, so I can't believe I've been doing this now for like 20 years, 21 years. It's crazy. But I love getting to be an eyewitness to history. And I still get a rush off of knowing something, even though now it's only literally a couple seconds before everyone else.
Thanks, internet.
Yeah, thanks, Twitter. But I love that, like just getting to be a part of history and the first draft of history. I've always loved that. I also love the idea of being able to be a representative of the audience. You know, we have had chances to interview presidents and, you know, people in really high positions. And I always try to remember and remind our correspondents who are doing these interviews, like, we are here on behalf of the audience. You know, not everyone has a chance to sit across from this high-powered person and hold them accountable or ask them common sense, normal people questions. And so we're here on their behalf. And so I treasure that opportunity to do that as well.
So can you give me some names of some people that you've been really excited about meeting or that you kind of put up there as like, wow, I'm really glad that happened?
Well, of course, any kind of presidential association or interview. So I've had the chance to be there for presidential interviews with President Trump. I had a couple of interactions, not an interview, but an interaction with President Obama. And when I was first in Washington, I had a couple of chances to cover not very high profile things, but as a producer for the President George W. Bush. And so those mm-hmm. really stick out to me. And then there are some that are maybe not as exciting to everyone else, but are exciting to me on a more personal level. And one of those was Johnny Erickson Tada. She is, you're familiar mm-hmm. with Johnny. So she's someone who has had a really personal impact on my life. And so getting the chance to talk to her and meet her husband, and after that had a chance for my husband and I to go to lunch with them. That was a really special
thing. Very cool.
Yeah. So that was really cool too. And then honestly, sometimes it's just the normal people that you meet doing mm-hmm. stories, and you can form relationships with them. And mm-hmm. so people that nobody would know or ever hear of.
Right. Yeah. Because I mean, so much of journalism is not the senator. It's the everyday people that we're talking to. Like, we want to get those stories. Those are the actual like normies out there that all these policies are affecting. And so we want to talk to them. I totally get that. Man, I wanted to meet George W. Bush so badly. I am such a fangirl. And I got so close. I got to go to an event that he was doing for, I want to say it had to do with his library, but I'm not sure. But it was in D.C. and I got to go. And I was like sitting, he was like right in front of me. And so I was cool. like, but you know, as soon as he was done talking, they rushed him out. And I was like, oh, but I did get a picture. So I have the proof that I was there. Yeah, but being in D.C. Is really, it does give you more opportunities than you would think. And, you know, I've also met some really cool politicians like John McCain and Mitt Romney. And so it was really awesome living there for 10 years. And I kind of miss it, although I'm sure it's like not the same now. Were you going into work every day?
Every day. Okay. I'm about half and half. So I'm usually in the office 2 to 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. We're still trying to keep our numbers at a certain level. And so we schedule people on a rotating basis. And so I'm in 2 to 3 days a week.
Okay. Got it.
You're not home today, obviously.
Yes. Well, I'm always home, but I'm just thankful my house is quiet because I don't have children here, which is wonderful.
Well, that's a miracle that you have a house full of children who are quiet.
I know. Well, they're not here, so. They wouldn't be, if they were here, it would not be quiet. They would be like this is how they are.
I only have one and I understand.
Well, okay. So let's transition to talking about your family a little bit. I told you in email, like I had clicked on your website and then I hadn't even realized that you had sort of written a lot about your marriage to your husband who has a disability. And you guys had like, I think you wrote a book and you you've done speaking engagements about it. And I just thought, how did I miss this all this time? Like we've been connected for a couple of years and I thought this is like, and all of a sudden I thought, man, this would be so interesting to talk with you about. So tell us a little bit about your husband and how you guys met and just sort of the story behind that.
Sure. My husband is Michael and we've been married 11 years now. And I actually met him when I was in college. It was the 90s. You have to take yourself back a little. It was the 90s and I went to Liberty University and I was a part of a ministry team that traveled on the weekends and did programs for youth ministry groups. And it was called Youth Quest.
I've heard of that. I feel like that sounds familiar.
'90s like Christian culture thing. You know, like we had matching shirts and like.
I was in it all. I get it.
Yeah. And so we had gone down to Clearwater Beach, Florida, one spring break on a trip. And when we went on those trips, like families from churches would host us as college students in their homes, right? So I neglected to leave a thank you note at my host home, and I was not going to be allowed to travel again until I rectified my error. Mm-hmm. So this is 1998. I need to find the name of this family that I stayed with, and I go on AOL, right? and look for anybody who has in their profile that they are associated with this church. And I send them messages. I need to get the address to these people. And Michael wrote me back.
Oh my gosh, that is so crazy.
Yeah. So I did meet him in a massive group of college students on that trip. And honestly, I probably never would have remembered it, except for the fact that he's in a wheelchair and he was the only person in a wheelchair. So I did remember meeting him, but it wasn't, no sparks flew or anything.
Yeah.
So we kept in touch for 8 years online.
Wow. Just like emailing.
Yeah. Emailing, because social media didn't exist yet.
Yeah.
So this was like back in the time of every time you moved, you would get a new email address because you got a new cable provider.
Oh my gosh, that's so
yeah,
funny.
Yeah, remember? And so yes. I would send out a mass email that says, hey, I got a job in, you know, Pittsburgh. I'm moving. Here's my new email. So we would kind of lose touch and get back in touch and sometimes talk on the phone and that kind of thing. And so we were just long distance friends, basically through our 20s, and went through a lot of the stuff that you go through in your 20s as friends. And then when Valentine's Day, he sent flowers to the newsroom that I was working in. And I was like, oh my gosh.
You were surprised.
Yeah, I was a little surprised, but I had kind of always wondered, you know, if we, I think I kind of knew in the back of my mind, if we were to ever go there, that that would be it. And so I spent a lot of time kind of not really walking all the way up to that line.
Right, right. Because it's also like, you don't want to lose your friendship if, you know, somehow it doesn't work out.
I was nervous about the whole disability thing. And I didn't really, you know a lot about that. But the flowers really kind of opened that up, and one thing led to another, and then I was on a plane to Texas, and so I flew out to Texas from Pittsburgh and hadn't seen him in 8 years.
Wow.
And yeah, it was like, I am really not that much of a risk taker, so, but it was great. I mean, we hit it off right from the beginning and just had so much to talk about. And we're in a really similar faith journey at the time. And so it was beautiful. And I loved that time of falling in love long distance. And then we dated long distance for about a year. And then we were engaged for about a year. And then he moved from Texas. At that time, I was living in Washington, D.C., here when we got married. So all of our time, like pre-marriage, was in vacation mode, you know, whenever we were.
Yes. I've heard that about, I was talking to someone else recently who had a similar situation, and it's like, well, yeah, well, before it was like always like having a good time.
Vacation. Yeah, I know. When we first got married, I was like, hold on, I have to work every day.
Like, well, this is not fun.
It's hard.
Yeah. So, yeah. I would love to hear more about, you know, your concerns about, oh, wow, well, he's in a wheelchair. So what does that mean? Like, what are some of the things that were going through your mind?
Yeah, I think mainly just a lot of not really knowing, you know, what, I mean, even I would remember Googling things like life expectancy.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. You know, I didn't know any of that. And just for a little bit of background, my husband is paralyzed from the chest down. He's a quadriplegic, and it happened during a missions trip, actually, to the Bahamas when he was in high school.
Oh,
he was on the gymnastics, a performance gymnastics team, and he did, he tells the story, he did a flip and a half and broke his neck in the Bahamas.
That is so, such a freak accident.
And, you know, happened on a missions trip. And yeah, so now that was 26 years ago. And so he's in a wheelchair all the time. He has limited mobility in his arms and no, like, use, not really much use of his hands. He can use his wrists. And so pretty limited. He is able to push his own manual wheelchair. But, you know, I had never really been around disability growing up, or, you know, didn't really know anybody closely who had that going on in their life. And so I was pretty intimidated by that. Did a lot of Googling. He was awesome with questions, though. I mean, really anything that I was nervous about, he just led me through that. Mm-hmm. Any of his care routine and that kind of thing. So, and early in our marriage, I did all of his care. And now I no longer do that. I mean, we're definitely in different season and have a child now.
Yeah, totally.
So I do his caregiving on the weekends. But early on in our marriage, I did all of it. And it was a lot to take on.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And so the blog that I used to write, it's really dormant now. But I wrote that during a season that I was trying to do it all and do all of his caregiving and do my career and, you know, have our new marriage. And, I was really struggling and I found an outlet through writing about it. Mm-hmm. And you know, this was during the season of kind of blogging. But through that, I was able to connect with some other people who were in a similar circumstance. And so I'm still friends with a lot of those people now on social media.
It makes all the difference to find people like in your very specific situation.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a little bit about his disability and kind of how that, you know, it affects everything.
Yeah.
Everything we do, everywhere that we go. You know, I drive a wheelchair van that's too tall to park in the parking garage at work.
Oh no.
You know, like yeah. All of those things. So, yeah.
Well, so you had met him fairly soon after this happened to him. So, you know, how would you describe him as a person? Because, you know, I feel like it takes a lot to, I mean, gosh, a 17-year-old guy, like to become so, you know, unable to function in that way. What is his sort of attitude and perspective on life, and what kind of person is he?
Oh man, it would make you sick. Like, he is the kind of person. He is the most flexible, patient, sweet person. Oh my goodness. Yeah. The opposite of me. I would be driven up the wall like multiple times a day. And no, he's very just personality wise, very go with the flow, more of a free spirit type. You know, he's content. I don't know how to say it. And he's been that way as long as I have known him. He's been one to go with the flow, and he's been really, good for me, because I am not one that is one to slow down or smell the roses or anything like that.
I'm just like you. I'm exactly like that.
Lists, you know, like go.
Yes, totally. And, totally.
Yeah. And, but he's really great with that. Not to say that he doesn't get frustrated. There are certainly times that it gets old, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it's the things that people don't think about. It's like people think about being in a wheelchair, or having a disability, that you really miss walking. And Michael and I talk about that. Like, that's really not that bad. Mm-hmm. You know, like I would like to be able to get dressed on my own, mm-hmm. you know, or like go to the bathroom. Like it's so like simple things. Open a jar, you know, like it's all of these really small things that add up to, you know, he spends a lot of time waiting on someone or me to help him accomplish something, you know, mm-hmm. so those things can be frustrating. But it's not necessarily the things that people think about, like running or walking or even driving, you know.
Did he have any sort of, like faith crisis or anything after it happened?
Actually, it was the opposite for him. In the summer before, so that happened in the summer before his senior year of high school. And during that time, he had a season of big spiritual growth before that happened. And then through that time, he experienced just an overwhelming sense of community from his church community. His dad was a pastor at the time. His dad's still a pastor, but his dad was a pastor at the church that he was on this trip associated with this church. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they just really surrounded their family and supported them and, you know, still have great relationships with all of those people. And so, you know, that really carried him through that process. And I think for him, he didn't really face the crisis of it until we were married. And I went through a crisis with it. And I realized after some time in counseling that I was grieving. It was grief that I was mm-hmm. going through. And he walked with me through that and realized that he had never really completed that process himself. And so it was pretty delayed until he, you know, walked through it with me and saw the impact on someone else's life. So.
And so how would you say that you've seen God work through the whole situation?
Yeah. I would go back to that verse about when, you know, when I'm weak, I'm strong. Mm-hmm. And I just come back to that continually, that, you know, the reminder that it's in our weakness that we're made perfect. I've been through, you know, some other things that not only that, but seasons of, longing or wanting something that you don't have or that you are praying for, and have really experienced the Lord drawing near to me when I draw near to Him. And so this has been something that has forced us to do that. And I can say that, like, that it really does bless you when you need the Lord. You rely on the Lord. It does bless you. And you can't experience that when you're just living in your own strength and in your own space.
This episode is brought to you in part by Beyond Ordinary Women Ministries, which prepares Christian women for leadership. At BOW, we believe that every woman is a leader because she influences someone. So, whom do you influence? Do you mentor a woman, serve in the workplace, or do you lead a small group, teach the Bible, or even lead an entire ministry? No matter who or how many you influence, our free online resources will help equip you. Our videos, podcast episodes, and articles from experienced women leaders will encourage you and perfect your leadership skills. They offer wisdom for dealing with ministry pitfalls, current biblical issues, health for your own soul, and insights for shepherding others well. In addition, BOW offers Bible studies designed to connect women of multiple generations. They provide a challenge to both women new to the Bible and those wanting to dig deeper. Be our guest and browse all of our free resources and low-cost Bible studies at beyondordinarywomen.org.
Yeah, it's a really interesting experience, whatever you're talking about. There's something I'm thinking of right now going on in our life that we don't really have control over. And you know, we were praying about it last night, and I just thought, like, there's nothing I can do. Like, I literally cannot take a class or listen to a TED talk. Like,
buy something.
Right? I can't hire an assistant to fix this problem. And I felt very just like, sort of just like, you know, but it's at that time really though that you do, like, you know, see how much that you believe in the power of God. And, like, you know, unfortunately, I mean, not unfortunately, we're very lucky in America that we don't face a lot of those situations many times, because we have so much here. But of course there are these circumstances, that are, you know, whether it's health or physical stuff, or maybe job related, whatever, that when that happens, like, you don't really have a choice. And it's like, oh, that's when you see how deep your faith really is. Right. So I totally agree with that.
Out of need. There's nothing we need. Yeah. Mm-hmm,
exactly.
So true.
Well, your husband sounds amazing. that's really cool. Do you guys still do speaking and or anything with your story?
We haven't. We did a little bit of that when my job really took off into getting into a higher level management and kind of started to take over more of my life. We didn't do as much of that. We would love to do more of that. And, you know, when COVID is over, hopefully we'll have more opportunities and things like that. But we have had some, and I have had some on my own, and he has had some on his own as well. And so we love it whenever we do have the chance to share what God's done in our life and what he's still doing.
And so you joined Hope Writer, so that means you like to write. So what kind of stuff do you like to write?
Well, I haven't written since my son came into our lives. I can barely even like write a journal. Like, it has rocked my world as far as
being
that.
A mom.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely underestimated kind of the level of, I don't know. Like, I don't even know how
the level of like need,
because writing was attention. Just release for me and part of my identity even. And now I try to write something and I just fall asleep. Like, I just can't even be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to, like, it is a like, you know, a like sort of a hobby or whatever, like a fun thing that you like to do as a creative release. But it's like you have to have the space for creativity in order to do that.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And I find that I don't have that space a lot of times because of work and mom life. Like, you know, I'm not, I do some writing for my work, but most of the writing I do is not like the kind of writing I want to do. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what would you like to write?
Like journaling. I really like processing through things by writing. And I really enjoyed blogging. I enjoyed that so much. And I still enjoy social media and writing some on Instagram and that kind of thing. It's nothing like it used to be. But I love Hope Writers. I'm still in there.
Yeah.
And I do still aspire to write regularly, mm-hmm. Or even do something like you're doing and have a podcast or write a book, you know, one day, but it's not right now. and that's okay.
Inform me if you can. Okay. There, you froze up for a second. Can you see me?
I can. And you look frozen.
Oh, but you can hear me?
I can hear you. Yes.
Okay. We'll just keep going then. If you can hear me. I was just going to say that I'm such a sucker for this stuff. I actually just joined another group as well. You know, I've been feeling really stuck because like I've been working on this book that I've been writing and, you know, it's like you're constantly build your email list. That's what you hear all the time. And yeah, I struggle. I can't seem to build my email list very well. And so anyway, I was just like, I got to get some better direction here. And I know Hope Writers has stuff for that too, but I was like, I need something fresh. And so I joined it. It's actually less expensive than Hope Writers. And it's like a new community of people. So I thought, you know what? It's going to be worth it.
And Allie really brings that business mindset to it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She has that personal experience of kind of starting with nothing.
Right.
And getting to where she is. And yeah, I love her. I love her stuff. And even I've even followed some of her content that is geared towards leadership as well. That's kind of the space I'm really in work-wise right now.
Yes. Yeah.
I love that stuff.
So. Well, yeah. So now I have like a whole like library of videos and I'm like I really needed something else to watch.
And now I'm a sucker now for like all the toddler courses.
Oh, I know. I have been thinking about taking one, to be honest with you, because
I have one that's really good, by the way. I could recommend it to you.
Oh, really? Yeah. What's it called?
It's called Big Little Feelings.
I follow that on Instagram.
Yes. Okay. So they have this toddler course. I don't know. How old are your kids now? You have one that's like.
My daughter is going to be 3 next week.
Okay.
And my son is 5.
Okay. Yeah. So my son is 2.5. So we're really in the.
I know. And I have a what is the word? Strong-willed toddler?
I think that's what they call them. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. So I really like their course that they've put together.
Okay. I'm going to need something.
Seriously, I've already seen some help.
Oh, good.
Connection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's like nobody knows what they're doing, but I sometimes am like, am I just like, do other parents let their kids eat on the couch? I don't know. I'm just a big, like, I'm just too lazy to like enforce rules sometimes. Cause I'm just like, I'm tired. Just eat fine. Eat on the couch, whatever.
Crackers for dinner. It's fine.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your son. What's his name again?
Okay. His name is Caden.
Caden. Okay. And you guys adopted him. So tell us about that journey.
Yeah. So we adopted him at birth 2.5 years ago. And before that, we had gone through a long season of trying to pursue fertility treatments and that kind of thing. And I had a pretty traumatic experience with an ectopic pregnancy. Mm. And then we decided we didn't want to pursue that anymore after that happened. And had friends who had adopted. And so I remember kind of being at this place of, I wish we were ready to adopt, and talking to my husband about it. And he said, well, I'm ready if you're ready. And I was thinking, why didn't we talk about this before?
Oh, that's so funny.
So I thought through my connections and my friends, and I made a list, of course, that's me, I make lists, of all of my friends who either were adopted or who had adopted, and just called them all up one by one and said, you know, tell me about this journey, and, you know, what do I need to do, where do I start, and had a couple of really helpful guides, personal guides who had previously adopted infants domestically in the United States, and got connected to an agency actually through a customer of my mom. So my mom has a business in North Carolina that sells baby items. It's called Rockabye Baby.
Aww, and so she sells
baby clothing, and it's kind of a consignment type of model. And so she sends donations regularly to a crisis pregnancy center in her area. And there was an adoption agency worker who was affiliated with them. So that was how I got connected to the agency that we ended up using.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And so it's just kind of one thing led to the other.
Now, how long was the process from, hey, we should adopt, to having a baby?
It wasn't that long for us. It was about 1 year. So we were super fortunate just through that whole process. We didn't have any delays or disruptions, or we weren't scammed or anything like that.
Because you hear these stories of how it can take so long and something goes wrong. And
it still felt like forever, you know.
A year, it would feel, I totally get that, because we had fertility issues. And I remember thinking like, oh, I'm going to be so old by the time I actually have a child.
And now that I am 41 with a 2.5-year-old, I'm like, I kind of am old.
I feel the same way. I'm like, because see, my mom had me like really young. So like, I have really young parents, and I'm like, well, that's not going to be us.
I know. Like, I remember when my mom turned 40 and I was in high school.
Yes. I was in college when my mom turned 40. Like, that's insane.
I know.
I'm like, but whatever. Yeah, we had other lives before children.
That's right. Yeah. And you know what? I am thankful for that. I will say this, that, you know, I can see with other moms that I'm associated with, whether it be in a social media group or, you know, the other moms at my son's school and stuff. I think that because I am a little bit older, I think it gives me a little bit more confidence and a little less comparison between what I'm doing and what someone else is doing. And I am grateful for that, because I think of myself 10 years ago or 20 years ago, I definitely would have questioned my own judgment and choices more than I do now. I'm more confident in who I am and comfortable in my skin and my ability to assess a situation and make a decision. So
yeah, I never thought about that, but I think that's probably true of myself as well. I don't feel like I really suffer too badly from like mom comparison type stuff. Right. So maybe that is an age thing.
Yeah. And so I'll take it.
Yeah. So
but back to the adoption process. So we have an open adoption with Caden's birth mother. And so she lives in another state. And we, through doing some research before adopting, we knew that we wanted to enter into an open adoption. That research has shown that that can be a healthy thing for a child to always know their story. And so we are navigating that with her. Actually, when he was born, I wasn't able to be there when he was born, but shortly after I was, and I was able to visit with her a number of times before we left that state and came back here and have been able to go back and visit. And so it's a really special, special thing for our family and for Caden. So we're grateful to have that.
What was it like, I guess, meeting him for the first time? What were you feeling before you met him? And then the moment, like, because I don't know if it's like, you know, you hear a lot of birth moms say, you know, some say, oh, it was love at first sight. And others are like, I don't know, like, it wasn't love at first sight. And it just depends on the situation. So is it a similar thing?
I don't have anything else to compare it to. So I don't know, but I can say that I felt like when I saw him for the first time that I was like, there you are. Like, aww. I was waiting for you and there you are, you know? And I remember the way that it had worked out was I wasn't able to be there when she was there and I had to wait for her to leave. And then I got a call from a social worker that said I could come then. Mm-hmm. I had gotten on a plane the night before after I had heard that he was born on a Sunday, flew on a Monday, met him on a Tuesday. And he was a little bit jaundiced. And so he had to stay in the hospital one extra day. But that was such a blessing for me because I was allowed to stay with him and room in at the hospital and have one night of nurses like helping me figure out what to do with this.
Yeah.
Baby.
Yeah.
That was really helpful. But so when I walked into the room, he was freshly bathed and swaddled, 2-day old, perfection in, you know, one of the clear bassinets, and it was up against the wall on the left-hand side of the room, and the bed was over here. And I walked in, and the nurses were like crying, watching me walk in.
Oh, I want to cry right now.
Oh my gosh. They're so sweet. I'm still friends with all of them on Facebook. But, I asked them, I'm like, can I hold him? You know, like I felt like I needed. Like,
you're his mom. You know?
Yeah. And so, so they put him in my arms, and I just immediately started looking him over and just wanted to know everything about him and study every, you know, fingernail and everything about him. And so, but I remember having this sense of like, there you are, there you are. It's you. It's you who I was waiting for. Cause I think for so long, 7 years, our journey of infertility and adoption to get to that point, I had this idea of kind of like a baby, like a generic baby. Like I want a baby. And so, but meeting him, it immediately just became very personal in that it was him, you know. And and so I remember that night he was he under the light, you know, because he was jaundiced, he was sleeping in this blue light, and I was not sleeping, just next to him, just like staring, you know.
Yeah,
I could take
totally
him out,
get that,
you know. There was a schedule, I could take him out and feed him, you know, a certain amount. And, but I remember at one point he looked, he turned his head and looked over at me, and he had these little like baby sunglasses on, and he was peering out from underneath them, and I was just like, oh, hey, so I'm here now. Hello.
Hope you like me.
Yeah. Like, but I also just remember this like huge sense of responsibility to steward that transition well for him, and respect that this really foundational, huge thing in his life was changing. And so just, I don't know, just trying to just be really loving and sensitive to his needs just from the very beginning, that like this morning you were with your birth mom on her chest, and now here I am, and hello, nice to meet you, you know. So just trying to, and that was such a dear time for the Lord. Like the Lord was so near to me during that time. I was all alone out there because my husband stayed here. That's a complicated situation for him to travel and and so it was just me and him and the Lord. And so it was, it's a precious, like precious special time.
Oh yeah, I just like really feel like you just painted such a good picture. And I you know, that I think it doesn't, it's like whoever you are, it's almost like when your baby is born, whoever bears it, you are kind of like that. Like, oh, there you are. Like, I feel like I had a similar kind of experience, you know. That's like, I didn't know him, and then he was there. And so that's so cool. And he's adorable. And you're saying he's, sorry, go ahead.
Share with you the other piece of that day that really sticks out to me. And I'm so thankful because I was able to have a photographer with me for our meeting. And so I have these beautiful photos, and she had just the sense to take pictures of the whole room, which I really treasure now because I didn't realize. So I came in and I met Caden at the time. And then I had the nurses sat me down with him, and I had to watch, you know, the video about a couple of videos. They had some they had like a DVD cart in there, and like a video about, you know, babies crying and dealing with stress and these kind of things. And, I realized as I was holding him, watching these DVDs, that I was in her room, his birth mother's room, that was the room, that was her bed, that those were her socks, that was her juice box.
Yeah.
Like it just hit me that, it was so sacred. It was just such a sacred place and time. And I didn't know what to expect going into that. I knew that, you know, we weren't going to be able to be with him together just because of the circumstances. But I felt like that was a gift to get to be in that same space that she had been in there with him as well. And that we got to, and that I know that that also, when I was able to tell her that after the fact, that that meant a lot to her too. They did move us into the room next door, cause that room hadn't been cleaned, but I'm just so grateful that it worked out that way. And I was able to be in the same place that, that he was. And then also that I just still have the visuals of that actual place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is so beautiful. That's something you should write about, I feel like. But, I mean, just the way you describe it is just... Well,
thankfully, it's definitely really seared in there. Yeah. I know that I've forgotten a lot about the last couple of years. But
well, yeah. The mom brain is real. I'll tell you what. Yeah. I know it. So you said you had a strong will like mine. Is that correct?
I don't know. Again, I'm like, does everybody think they have a strong will?
Yeah, I know. I'm like, I don't know. I feel like mine are more difficult than other kids, but maybe I'm wrong.
I don't think so. I mean, I think they're all pretty difficult, you know?
Yeah.
No, but he's great. He's fun. He's funny. He's sweet. He's at like peak toddler cute voice, you know, like everything he says right now is funny and adorable.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, totally get that.
It's just the cutest thing. I just want to follow him around at all times and just record.
I know. I was just the other day, I like kept recording like the same, like nothing interesting was happening. They were just kind of like playing around and I just kept hitting video and I was like, well, I can't really just like video for hours. That would be boring later. But yeah, you want to capture as much as you can because you know it's how precious those are going to be later.
The funny things that he says, you know, the way that he says them, like a couple of things he's saying right now are he'll lay down on the floor and he'll say, "Mommy, snack me up."
Yes.
I don't know.
What is it? Oh yeah. My daughter lately, she calls Band-Aids. She calls them Bam-Bams. Like, Mom, yeah. I need a Bam-Bam. Yeah. Like, oh, never say it any different. Always say
so
Bam-Bam.
Cute. Yeah. The other day he had hiccups and he said, "I have the kick-ups."
Yes. Oh, yeah. We're in the exact same phase with my daughter. So I get that.
It's so fun.
When they're just learning language. Yeah. Well, yeah. I want to ask you, I should have prepped you for this. I can't remember if I did. I just love to ask people what they've been reading or what authors they like, podcasts, TV shows, anything that you've been really enjoying lately. I love to hear about that.
Yeah, sure. Well, you did prep me. And so I did.
Okay, good. I can't remember.
Like, what have I, because again, mom brain, I'm like, what have I read lately? I don't even know.
Oh, I can't pull that stuff.
I'm big into audiobooks right now. Mm-hmm. And it's great because our library has an app where you can check out audiobooks. Mm-hmm. And so one of my favorite recent, but I will tell you, I think it's a favorite of all time, is Matthew McConaughey's book, Green Lights.
Really?
Yeah. I highly recommend
it. What do you like about it so much?
He's such a good storyteller, Erica. Such a good storyteller.
I heard someone else say that it was really good on audio.
Yeah, really good on audio. Definitely just, you know, it's Matthew McConaughey, so he has an amazing voice. But he's telling, it's a memoir, so he's telling his personal stories just with all of the, you know, realness and emotion with it. And it's a really well done audio performance, but it's also a really good book. Hmm. And he takes some, so basically what it's about is he turned 50 and he looks back at kind of his first 50 years and tells stories about his mom. I love the motherhood stories that he tells about his mom and his brother and how he ended up with some of the lines that he's famous for. It's really, really, really good.
All right.
I never would have, like, I'm not a celebrity person at all. I hardly even watch any television other than news. But that book is really good. I'm definitely recommending.
What made you pick it up?
It was free. It was in the library app.
Oh, it was just in the library. Oh, yeah. I guess that would work. Well, I saw him like going around, like he was on like Jen Hatmaker's podcast and stuff. And I was like, what is he?
Christian Women's doing? Podcast Rounds, which was interesting. That's very much the space I live in. Like,
yeah, same.
Yeah. So I think we probably even have a lot of podcasts in common. The one I listen to every day first is usually The Daily by the New York Times.
Yeah, that's one of my regulars.
Yeah, I listen to, usually when I'm driving to work, I tick through several news podcasts, but I love that one. The journalism and the storytelling on it is like, there's nothing
so good.
Better. Mm-hmm. I like the Popcast. Do you listen
Me
to
Me too. Oh yeah. Yeah, I love that. I'm a Patreon supporter. Are you a Patreon?
Yes, I am.
Yes.
I am.
Yeah. It's so good. And I've really actually, I also enjoy The Bible Binge.
The Bible Binge, yeah. Yes, so, I love The Favorite of Forsaken. That's one of my favorites.
Yes, some of those I really like. There was one she did that I really liked. But like last year I was reading the Bible in a year and I found that listening to the episodes of the Bible Binge that were about the parts I was reading about, they really did enhance my understanding of what I was reading. It was really cool.
Yeah, I know. And they just do, they make it seem so easy to be able to take it to that level. And yeah.
Oh, you know, they put out so much. Oh, I know, Knox. They're so funny. I love them.
They're so funny. They're so funny. So I also love the Craig Groeschel Leadership Podcast.
Okay, okay.
That one is just a monthly. And so, you know, it's nice when it pops in there. It's also short, which I appreciate because like a lot of, I listen to so many podcasts. I can't even listen to all of them.
I know.
And so I appreciate that one. I like the Lazy Genius podcast.
Okay. This one? Kendra Adachi. I don't listen to it, but I'm familiar with her.
Yep. Yeah. I like that one. And I like the Church Politics podcast with Justin Gibney.
Obsessed.
Yeah. We have a daily newscast that we produce at CBN in Washington called Faith Nation. And he's a regular contributor on our show.
I'm obsessed. Like I listened to it yesterday.
I
am also Patreon supporter for them. Yeah. And I'm just like a diehard evangelist for the Ann campaign and church politics. Good. Like I absolutely love everything that they say. Like, I mean, of course there are like here and there, there are times where we're not like 100% agreement, but for the most part, I'm like, if you're a Christian, you need to be on this. Like that's all there is to it.
I so agree. And
I just respect Justin Gibney. I just have so much respect for his voice. And, you know, I also like loved Michael Weir. Like I kind of know him a little bit and like personally. Yeah. And then I don't know the other guy as well, cause he's sort of newer on the podcast. Chris. Yeah. But I love what he has to say. As well. I mean, it's just so needed. And then this week they were talking about the Equality Act and like that's a tough one.
Well, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a tough one to talk about. And I'm so glad that they are getting out there and doing it like because it needs to be done. So anyway, we could just go on and talk about podcasts.
I have like podcast lists forever and ever and ever because I just listen to them constantly.
I know. And then like sometimes you look through and you're like, I don't know. Nothing sounds good. Like I have so many and I try to switch it up. And then there are weeks where I'm like, nothing sounds good. But
there was one that I listened to because of you. So I listened to Annie F. Downs most of the time, but
yeah, I check the guests on her.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of depending on the guests. And I totally scrolled past the Tim Tebow one until I saw that you said, this is worth your time. Like,
yeah. I would have.
So I went back and I did. So
yeah, that's one that I kind of wasn't sure if I was going to listen to. And so I'm not really sure why I ended up hitting play, but man, I'm glad I did. It was so good. You're like, Tim Tebow is an amazing person. I love him. Like yeah, I wanted to buy his book, but I was like, my book stack is way too high right now.
Oh, same. I don't even, my book stack doesn't even have any hope. And I keep
buying You probably get a lot of free books too.
Yeah. And I don't read them. They just stack up and I still want to be around them, you know?
Like, yeah. They're such a comfort. I totally agree. I don't get a lot of free ones, unfortunately, but I don't mind buying them. Honestly, ever since joining Hope Writers, I've kind of been like, you know, I really want to support authors. And so giving my money to a book, if I want to read it, like I have no problem. Like, I don't buy fiction. I only buy nonfiction. But
Has it always been that way for you? Like never into fiction?
No, not always. Like, really? But in the past few years, and I think it's honestly really is related to Hope Writers. I've gotten so much more acquainted with so many authors that I'm sort of like, oh, I kind of know them. You know, I want to read their book. So, and also writing my book now has been so much research and I'm like, oh, well, you need to read like, you know, I need to read more C.S. Lewis and I need to read the classics because I'm trying to be like a wise person. And so all of those kind of books also have been stacking up.
I'm so bad at fiction. And I read something from Russell Moore last year that was like, you should read fiction. And I was like, okay, I'm going to. And I think I made it through one book.
I did read a fiction book recently. I have it by my bedside, so I'd read it before bed. But like when it comes down to my limited time, that's not what I want to read.
Yeah.
I know you're like a doer like me. So you're always like, I need to be learning something. Come on.
Exactly.
Well, Dana, I will let you go. But thank you so much for being on the podcast today and telling your story. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It was fun to talk to you.